Spencer asked me to do this. I certainly hope this is something that's helpful for you. Just wanted to share a few things tonight that I've been thinking about. I know that's dangerous. Thinking for me is often dangerous. But these are some things. I hope I'm not going out too much on a limb, because all the stuff that I've read regarding music, I've never really seen much about this. Not directly like I want to talk about it tonight. So certainly hope I'm not the blind leading the blind into a ditch. But I think there's something to this. I think this will be helpful. Certainly helpful for me to think about music this way. So let's just here we go. All right, so what Spencer asked me to do is talk about music as worship, specifically addressing the role of instrumentation and playing music or playing musical instruments as worship. So there's lots of stuff that I could talk about. As language. So prayer and worship often involve the use of language, if you think about that. Jesus, when asked to teach his disciples, interesting, I didn't even know what you were going to do today. Jesus, when asked to teach his disciples to pray, used the spoken language. Since each of us is most fluent in the English language, my hope is to discuss and analyze a little bit about how the English language works. I'm not going in significant detail, but probably Tim could offer more on that. You were English, right? I thought so.
Did you teach English, Tim?
Okay. So, yeah, but by drawing... go ahead.
I was just going to make a slide comment. He would have been one of the least favorite kinds of teachers.
He was a principal, too, so he could...
Oh, wow.
Exactly. So it's my hope that to draw some parallels between the English language and music. So I think we all agree that the English language is a language. And so by looking at a few elements of that, my hope is if we see some similarities in music to kind of define that as a language that we can use. So it's my hope to be able to express to you why I believe both emotions and complete thoughts can be expressed in using the musical language without using text. I don't know if y'all learned that a sentence, what defines a sentence is it's a complete thought. So how did you learn that? In other words, it's my hope that by establishing or helping to establish in your mind the idea that music as a language, then perhaps you would be more released to be able to either play instruments or to sing. I'm sure you've already done things such as humming or whistling tunes just because you're happy. It doesn't really, it's an expression of something, but it doesn't really have words necessarily. So, language is the means of communication. If you look at your little handout there, so look at the top part, the one with the graph. This is Education 101. So hopefully this isn't too cerebral or heady academic. So effective communication. So you start off with meaning, correct? I think some people would say, well, you think in words. Do you? Really? What do you think? You think in words? Raw. I've been told that I ask questions like Bruce, kind of like you're looking for a specific answer, but I don't know what it is. It's not intended to be a trick question, though. Right. So I do. I think about things and then I apply a word to it. So, you know, I know the English word for chair. I know the Spanish word for chair. But I don't think about the word C-H-A-I-A-I-R. I can't even spell it right. You know, I don't think about it as the word. I think about it as that thing. So you have meaning, which then we encode symbols or sounds. So what we're talking about is using as language. So for example, let's say I have meaning. I want to write a letter to somebody. So I have something that I want to express. I encode it into some kind of language. If I tell them in person, I would use sounds, correct? If I'm going to write it down, I want to use some sort of symbols that represent something. And then I'll encode that into a medium. Well, a medium is any kind of thing that transfers. So like in this case, the medium would be the letter. It would be the paper and ink that would bear those symbols, correct? Hopefully this isn't TD. Which then is transferred to the second party, could be by USPS, also known as snail mail, to which the person who receives it, hopefully it's the correct addressee, then reads the letter, decodes those symbols, and reassigns meaning. Does that make sense? Do I need to review? So you start off with meaning A. This is what I was thinking. I encode it and put it into some sort of medium, which is transferred to the other party. That other party decodes it and reassigns meaning. Now, effective communication is, the more effective the communication, how about this? The closer that meaning B equals meaning A is the more effective communication. So you can say, if y'all ever did like, I'm the generation of like IM chat, you know, AIM. Or email, you know, it's always face-to-face is the better communication. There's also a nonverbal communication that can happen, a face-to-face conversation that can't happen over email. And that's part of the reason why it's not as effective of a communication tool, because there's information that's lost. It's more likely in a face-to-face conversation that we're going to leave that conversation with an understanding that what I meant to say, what I inferred is what you implied. what I was intending to communicate, you received. Okay? So, what does this have to do with music? We're going to get there. So, if you notice, under effective communication, the closer meaning B is to meaning A, the more effective the communication that has taken place. Noise is anything that prohibits meaning A from equaling meaning B. So that could be, I don't write in English very well. That could be the letter carrier dropped it in a mud puddle and it smeared. It could be I'm trying to communicate verbally to you and it's very loud next door. I'm going to play some music examples, and I'm hoping that my noise doesn't bother the next class and inhibit any kind of communication that's taking place there. Okay? Flip over. Just some guidelines here. Hopefully this makes sense. All right, what we don't want to do, in other words, just going through the motions. What happens when any expression is not rooted in a right attitude toward God? Okay, this is what we don't want to do. Isaiah 29:13. The Lord says, "These people come near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship of me is based on merely human rules they have been taught." Matthew 15:9. "They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules." This is Jesus talking about the Pharisees. Romans 1:25. "They exchange the truth about God for a lie and worship and serve created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised." This is our temptation, is to create idols of things. And so if you flip back over, basically what we don't want to do is start the process somewhere in the middle. In other words, we don't begin our communication with God with meaning. We're just enjoying the music for the music's sake. We're not actually We're not worshiping in that point. I think probably the best illustration for me is a Sunday morning singing a familiar song. I'm sure we've all done this. And we're going through the motions, and there's not communication happening between us and God. Probably either way, other than conviction from God. Whatever it be, you know, thinking about the tract and trailer we passed, or just we're not relating to God. So that's what we don't want to do, just be going through the motions. That's definitely not a good thing, and God pretty strongly, spew you out of your mouth, spew you out of his mouth. That's not something that we want. The picture of God vomiting us up is not, it's not a good one. So what we do want to do, Matthew 14:33, then those who are in the boat worshipped him, saying, this is right after Jesus calmed the storm. Those who are in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. They had a real, this was coming out of, they weren't just going through the motions. While they just saw a man say, be calm, and the waves stopped. This is true worship right here. John 4:23, yet a time is coming and now has come when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. That's the kind of worshiper we want to be. Aren't we glad that it's God's spirit that helps us? 2 Samuel 6:5, David and all Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord with castanets, harps, lyres, timbrels, sistrums, and cymbals. Most of those are percussion instruments, castanets. I believe, I would have to look this up. I'm sure you're familiar with the Spanish type castanet. You know the. Are you? I say castanets. The Spanish dances and the castanets. Sometimes they put on shoes. A lot of times it's with the hands. I can't do it very well. It's a really special technique. Two little round shaped. It's not finger cymbals. They're wooden, and they're about this big, and they kind of rock. It's almost like two little shells that clap together like this. So you'll hear castanets in Spanish music. I wish I could say for sure that that's what these were, but that's my guess. This is either NIV or ESV. I imagine that they would have translated that. If there was a modern version, it probably would have done that. Harps. Lyre is close to a harp. Timbrels, sistrums, and cymbals. If you know what a tambourine is, I think sistrum and timbrel is pretty close to that. And cymbals would be pretty similar to what we're familiar with. Okay, so all instruments. There are no voices, notice, and no words. They're celebrating with all their might before the Lord. 2 Chronicles, all the Levites who are musicians, Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun, and their sons and relatives, stood on the east side of the altar, dressed in fine linen and playing cymbals, harps, and lyres. They were accompanied by 120 priests sounding trumpets. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices in praise to the Lord and sang, he is good, his love endures forever. And so there's a lot of things we talk about here in Sovereign Grace, or at least what I've heard mostly, what's rung true in my heart, is that our worship comes out of a heart of gratitude, recognition of what God has done for us. So he is good, his love endures forever. And so, and praise be to God, we're on the other side of this. We know even more details than they did. So what we don't want to do and what we do want to do. We want to be worshiping God in truth and not just going through the motions. All right, let's get into a little bit of the technical stuff here. language is more than vocabulary. It is form. This is where it gets a little nebulous. I hope it's not too deep, but I think this will work. It's more than just vocabulary. It's just more than just the words that what it is. It's form. It's the way it's put together. It's an arrangement of symbols or sounds that express meaning. The form, or how smaller components of the language are formatted together, is that which makes the language make sense. If you've ever played Jumble or Scrabble, you ever played those games? So you have a whole bunch of letters, and it looks like if you have a bunch of consonants, I'm not sure it's politically correct to say that it'd be a Russian name, but a bunch of letters together, you know, doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. It looks kind of like an eye chart. But when you put those in a certain order, then we start being able to assign meaning to those as certain collections of letters. There isn't meaning unless the letters are placed into a certain order or form. We understand based on form. Music is only effective as a language when it is expressing meaning. Just like speaking random words communicates little more than confusion. You may understand the words, but it's the order and context of how they are used that gives them logical meaning. So, for example, with music, you have just isolated noises. It doesn't really have much meaning. But let's say you have those noises as a fire alarm. You assign meaning to that, right? But out of context, it'd just be like, what's that annoying thing? Church bells. Or let's say individual isolated pitches from a Beethoven symphony. They don't really have a whole lot of meaning necessarily. The letter A has some meaning, but when you assemble it and put it in form with other stuff, it can have a lot more meaning. Okay? There's an interesting example here as well. I always like to point this out. I'm talking about this. What's the role? Many of you may have seen movies about like medieval warfare or even like Revolutionary War. What's the role of musicians in warfare?
They can call you to battle. They can call retreat. They can call assembly.
Good. In other words, shoot the musician, right?
I mean, the guy with the Red Cross on his hat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like cutting the telephone line. That's too old. It's like knocking down a cell phone tower. It's cutting communication. Right. So if that was a communication tool, there's no words assigned to those things. It's just, these are just melodies. Or certain rhythms, you know, da 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 da. That's a retreat or whatever the command may be. It's really important. You know, the general or commanding officer can only yell so loud, and you don't exactly want to say retreat, you know, really loud. You know, that's not going to be really helpful. Some of these things you want to do in code, so your team has the best results. Just as an interesting side note, if you think about the Revolutionary War, that created some confusion because you've got guys that were originally in the British Army who knew the commands of the British commands, but where the revolutionaries were using some of the same commands, and there was confusion. So kind of interesting. Also, I did a quick search on trumpets. And scripture, and every time there are trumpets, it's always a gathering of people. So that you said, gathering people in, and even say at Thessalonians, gathering people, the sound of the last trump, kinds of things. I was just really curious: what did they play at Jericho? Did they play anything particular, or like Gideon? Was there a particular melody that was, you know, this is like God has given us the victory? It would be kind of interesting to think. Were they playing the victory song when the walls were still standing there? It's interesting. Think about it. Speculation, of course. So, language is form. Look at the bottom of the first page. It says English language versus musical language. I guess some of this you'll have to take my word for it, but I'd be happy to answer questions if you have some later. So think about the English language. So the smallest components of the English language, would you say letters, probably? And then you put letters together and you have words. And then you put words together and you, like a string of words, and you have a phrase. And you put phrases together and you get sentences, right? Put sentences together, you get paragraphs. Put paragraphs together and you get essay or composition, depending on what it is. Same thing with music. You have notes, so individual notes. Then you have a small collection of notes, which would be a motive, like da 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 da. That's a motive, right? Four notes. Yes, four notes. Short, 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 long. So that pitch relationship, the first three shorter, and the same pitch, and then the fourth one longer and lower. That motive, Beethoven created a whole symphony based on those pitch relationships. It's a motive. Yeah, absolutely. That has meaning, doesn't it? Don't do that in high school. You'd be arrested. Absolutely, it has meaning because what's going to be, regardless of what you mean, there's going to be meaning B, meaning what that other person thinks is going to be. You'll be going to his office and maybe to see the deputy on the hall. Exactly. So yeah, motive, small collection of pitches and phrases. I'm going to play a few examples here so you can, I can be pointing these out. Phrase, and then paired phrases, so longer collections of pitches, then sections of music, then you have a whole composition. Let's experience a little bit of these. First off, let me just play an example here. If I can find it. Hopefully it's not too loud for them. Just listen to the dialogue and communication, just to kind of whet your appetite a little bit. Particularly the trumpet. Phrase, comma. Second phrase, period. Comma. Period. The next couple sentences, that was the comma. Period. Comma. New paragraph. He's saying something. Think about it as a sentence, little sections. Not sure what that was. Response. Little phrase or motive. Melody come back. Dialogue to you two trumpet dialogue. Another paragraph. Anybody play the trumpet? Okay. Yeah, that was a recording of Maynard Ferguson. He's you may have heard of him, but he's really, really known for that screechy trumpet. I think he had like 3 lip surgeries, and you can see why. anyway, hopefully that kind of whets your appetite just thinking about music this way as communicating something. I think jazz is one of those things that's pretty clearly that. I can't condone all of the moral practices of jazz musicians. Actually, very few of them can I condone. But if you think about the jazz style, it's just people expressing what they feel at the moment. I think worship can be that. Here's an example that's a little bit more orthodox, and I'll be able to point out phrases for you. You probably heard this introduction. First melody, comma, this is continuing the phrase. So basically there's 2 sentences. We can think about question and answer. So when you see I have paired phrases there, you have a phrase that may be a question, then you have a phrase that's an answer. So let's do that one more time. Question, answer, new sentence, answer. It ends emphatically. Da, 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 da. That repeats, so you have the same sentence again, same question, and same answer. Now, new paragraph. This is the new sentence. Ends in a question, answer sentence, it's a period. That repeats, a little bit more instrumentation, add the drums and cymbals in there, sounds cooler. Question to the answer. Now, C, the third section, third paragraph. Some of you may know this, but web-footed mother, like duck may be somebody's mother. Anybody know what this title of this is? Or who the composer was? Yes, John Philip Sousa? Stars and Stripes Forever. So, we have transitional material. I'd love to do a whole formal analysis on this with you, but we don't have time. So cool. Transitional material. Still. Now, go back into C, which is what we just heard, the dark web-footed mother. With a pick solo on the top. Piccolo. Do you still hear that? The phrase? Yep. Have the question sentence. Turns a little different than it was last time. You have an answer. Then it transitions again and then ends big on C again. So the form of this would be introduction, A section repeated, B section repeated, C section. with transition, and then see repeated, then transition, then see repeated again. So you can see, yeah, I'm kind of using some music terminology here, but we even talk about music material that way. Like if you're in a math class, you say this is a variable. I don't know what that number is. We'll just call it X. Because we don't know what it is, we have to call it something, so you and I have effective communication. We're talking about the same thing. Neither of us know what it is. Okay? So, here's the first part of the song, we'll call it A. And the next part of the song, we'll call it B. Okay? So we even talk about musical material that way. And so we can see how the form works. And there's lots of different forms all the way through the last 1,000 years of history or so. That's pretty, you can see how the form of different pieces became vogue for a while, and then we'd move on to something else. Probably the most popular form now would be like verse-chorus form. So like what we sing, so for example, the form of the songs that we sing, usually you have an introduction, then you have a verse, and then you have a refrain. Well, refrain is kind of fancy for chorus. I guess a long time ago you'd have a solo for the verse and then you have the chorus. Everybody sings. So you have this part that's repeated each time. So you have verse, chorus, and then we might have a bridge in there. So you may have heard some of these terms before, right? So that is the form of the piece. That's how it's organized. That's how the musical material is organized. Hopefully we're not completely confused. I think y'all are doing okay. I'm doing good. You're not, I'm not quite as confused as some of the teenagers I teach at times. Okay, here's a really interesting thing. And if you look on the back here, that's interesting to me. You may have heard it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Of course, we could talk about the heart issues involved and how actions speak louder than words, right? And many other factors of why the statement is true. But I want to focus on the literal execution of how you say it for a moment. I think we all now agree that text can be a language of communication when organized into a form. So when we're using words, we understand it's communication. There are two main aspects of spoken language that clarify its meaning and make it come alive. Inflection and rhythm. Some people say that spoken language is music. I can kind of agree. Depends on how liberal you want to define music. Let's say take Mandarin Chinese, for example. Meaning of many words in Chinese, I'm not going to venture to say I understand Chinese. But what I understand is that there are some words that, just based on the inflection of the word, determines the meaning. So, I think it was like ma is one direction, I don't remember which, is mother, and ma is like cow or something. So just one up and one down. What I really want to research is how does that affect their music? I think Chinese music would be fascinating, or Japanese. It would be really interesting to study for that reason. Because what is inflection other than assigning varying pitch relationships to the words or the syllables, right? So let's look at this. Look what you have here. Inflection in spoken language. All right. I am going to the store. In other words, you're answering the question, who's going? I am going to the store. That you could be interpreted, I'm determined to go. Just think about the inflection. So the accent or accentuated word is usually a higher pitch. Typically in a phrase or a sentence, the inflection goes up near the middle, it has a climax and comes down, almost like a plot line. So it goes up, gets interesting, goes down, maybe for a comma, and then goes up again, and then comes down to punctuation. Right? It sure does. So the inflection really is that way. Music is, what we're going to get to is the melodic contour. In other words, the shape of the melody is typically the same way. So a phrase of music usually starts on lower pitches, goes to higher pitches, and comes back down to lower pitches. And then it starts on lower pitches and goes to higher pitches and comes back down. And I'll let you sleep on that. But yeah, that's really onto something here. So look at the similarity here. I am going to the store is determining who's going there. I am going to the store is I am definitely going to the store. Okay? I am going to the store. So I'm on my way to the store, or you're not going to stop me. Okay, I'm going to the store, which would be going to the store instead of away from it. I'm going to the store, which would be not the other one, or, you know, obviously I'm going to the store, right? You know where I'm going. There's implied information there, but you hopefully, based on our relationship, you understand what I mean. Yeah, the store, right, or Bass Pro. I'm going to the store would indicate I'm going there and not somewhere else, right? So here's this little six-little word sentence. Is there any wonder we have so many breakdowns in communication? All it is inflection. It's how you say it determines the meaning. And I'm kind of wrapping in inflection a little bit to the form of how you actually say it determines whether you communicate clearly or not. So, melodic contour, so the shape of the melody. As I just said, usually the melody goes up. Let me just play this example, and I'll play another example here in a minute, but let's see if I can find this. I've got it in here somewheres. Here we go. This is a secular example. You may or may not know this song, but hopefully it's not offensive. It's a Christina Aguilera song. It works really well in high school. It actually comes from the movie Mulan, which many of you may not even be permitted to watch or don't permit your children to watch. But teenagers connect with it. Hopefully this will work. I think it's a good example of the shape of the melody. So you can see the phrasing of the text versus the phrasing of the music. So just think about the pitch relationships and the shape of the phrase. Goes up. Comes down to a comma. Period. New sentence. Goes up, right? Comes down to punctuation, new sentence, it goes up, comes down to punctuation, comes down to more punctuation. Now, asking the question, who, it's high, who, right, inflection goes up. When will my reflection, is the question. Yeah? Did you kind of get the idea? Yeah? New key, but it's the same same thing, just different key. Comes down to punctuation. Comes back down to punctuation. Goes up again. Comes down to punctuation. Comes down to more punctuation. Same question. Goes up for a question. When? Again, the question goes up. And then it goes to a bridge and keeps going. You kind of see, so here, the phrase and the music and the text going on. And this would be one of the things, if you were to ask me the question, it's a whole another series of lectures, but if you were to ask me the question, what makes some music better than others? That can be a really touchy question, but part of the criteria I would use to determine what is good music would be this. How well, especially music that includes text, how well does the shaping of, or the phraseology of the text match the phrasing of the music? And if you create that as normal, if you stray away from normal, see the stronger normal you create, Have you ever heard this? You have to have normal before you have abnormal. So the stronger normal you create, then the more slight an abnormality can be and be visible or apparent. Okay. Yeah, that's a whole other lecture. I think it's really fascinating. Okay. A lot of contour. Let's listen to one more example, and then y'all want to, we're going to have time to practice, or should I?
Like I said, I'm not a teacher, so you take as long as you want.
Okay. As you can see, I'll dig this stuff. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why I use an example, because it's clearer than most, yeah.
Do you have one that does it kind of like an anti-fast?
Yes, I want to be careful here, because the worship leader's here. Yeah, if that's what you intentionally do, if you create normal so that with the intention of having abnormal stand out, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an artistic choice. If I want to have a painting that's mostly blue on the background, if it's almost completely blue, if I make a little yellow mark here, it's going to pop out. But if it's a little bit more vague and marbled with other colors, if I do that same yellow mark, it's not going to be as clear. So, yeah, so it really depends on your artistic choice of what you want to do. I think that the same thing happens that many of you have been in the like worship team meeting, or a couple of you. We talk about with the band having each person be a certain part of the pie. I'm still trying to figure out what that means myself. But if you have... Say for example, I'm going to use names because I think he does it well. For example, Dave played a long time by himself. Is this correct? And he does fantastic with piano by himself. When you add a bass in there or other instruments, he really lightens up. And that's because you've added other components in there. What that does, less is more in that situation. So the less that you're playing, then the more effect that it has. The reason that is because you have a clean slate, and then if you just do a little one or two note little thing here, then it's like that yellow mark on this wall. But if everybody's playing full blast, then there's no subtleties that you can bring out. Then you really limit what you can do artistically, what you can express when you're just muddied with all kinds of colors. Does that answer your question? Oh, I didn't answer your question because you're looking for examples.
Oh, no, actually, you did. I think I misunderstood something you said early on.
Okay.
To create that normal, that's kind of more a thing that a culture does, right? It's not this particular artist, but if it's a cultural understanding that this is the way we make music.
This gets fantastic.
Outside of that.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah, music doesn't come out of a vacuum. It comes from people, as any art. I'm sure Colin talked about this. I haven't listened to the recordings, but I'm sure he did when he talked about art last series, art and worship, and we as Christians, how do we use this? Absolutely, it doesn't come out of a vacuum. You know, what do we study in history? Artifacts. We study people's art. That's how we understand what they did, what they thought about, what they dreamed about. We dig up archaeological digs and find pottery and all kinds of stuff that tell us what they ate. And you know, all these things are art that tell us about their lives and what they did and what they thought about, songs that they create. I think it could be a sad commentary on our day. If you think about music that's done, it comes from people. It doesn't just come out of a vacuum. I don't think that music that you hear on the radio just is, I mean, some of it's grotesque for the sake of a reaction, but I think a lot of it is genuine, which is what would be sad about it. I could make an artistic choice and say, well, people are expecting this, haha, but I'm going to do this. And it's going to be effective because. It's actually interesting you bring this up because there was a piece that was premiered 100 years ago from today. It's called The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. He was a Russian composer who was in America, I think, at the time. It was premiered in Paris. And it caused a riot. So people were booing and, like, they started, literally, like, the composer was there, the choreographer was there. It was a ballet. You know, the French are expecting, you know, pretty tutus and dancing across, and it's pretty stunning. I'm not recommending it as something that you should spend your time researching, but it definitely is an interesting piece of music. You would definitely study music history if you study music. The audience was not expecting that, so much so that they responded in a violent way toward each other. And I mean, the composer was like, he left the room, and it was bad. It was really bad. So they were expecting a certain thing, and the same thing happened to Beethoven. I mean, he was crazy. The word would be avant-garde, cutting edge. He was just not liked. And we listen to Beethoven, it's just normal to our ears, but if you think about it, all they've heard up to that point, here I want to go into music history, I just don't have time for that. All they've heard up to that point is stuff from 17th century, early 18th century, 17th century, early 17th, 16th, late century, before he was alive, what they were listening to. And he was transitioned from late 1700s to early 1800s. So it's kind of an interesting composer. I do want to play this, and we're not going to be able to make it all the way through, but just thinking about some of the things that we've just talked about here today. By the way, are there any other questions? Because that might be as important. Good questions. Let me back up to where I was. Okay. This is opening movement of Piano Concerto by Rachmaninoff, Sergei Rachmaninoff. He's also another Russian who was in America quite a bit in the turn of the 20th century, early 1900s. I really enjoy his music. He's what you would call a romantic composer, composes in the romantic style, which was really most of the 1800s. It's kind of a line of thought. Remember, music doesn't come out of a vacuum. It comes, you know, if you study the art and music of people, it comes from their ideologies. And, of course, a lot of that is going to include religion, what they believe about deity and how their relationship with that deity is. Our hope is that our music says something about what we believe and know to be true about our deity, which is Lord Jesus Christ, the only true, right? Absolutely. It doesn't come out of a vacuum. It comes from what people are believing and think is cool. In the 16th, 1700s, was more what the king or who was paying you thought was cool. And that's what you would write. Piano Concerto. You may have heard those words before. Piano, obviously, is piano. Concerto means what became most popular. Several kinds of concerti, but solo concerto became most popular. And it was one solo instrument accompanied by full orchestra. This is probably his most famous one. If you listen to piano concerto competitions, this is usually in there. Listen to the phrasing. Little introduction. There's a lot more we can talk about music, the mood, what's creating that, harmonies. Just talking about phrase structure now. Here's the phrase in the cellos. goes down. The phrase, down to punctuation. That repeats. Same sentence, same question. Different answer. I love his melodies. They're just gorgeous. Keep spinning. Different texture in the piano adds the building. Keep spinning it. He's not there yet. He arrives. Kind of comes down to the end of that little paragraph. That's just the introduction paragraph. He's just getting started. It's just doing little parts of the motive, little parts of the melody that you just heard. This is just transitional material, some of it from previous material that you've already heard, smaller components of the melody. Arrival. New melody. This is theme two. Comes down to punctuation. More punctuation. Have a question. Answered by woodwinds and strings. Asked. Stop that. I don't know if you can feel how emotion-packed that is. I really wish I could turn this up so you could just feel the sound envelop you. And that really is what, you know, what we want to do. One of the biggest questions I get from some of my students, those who are believers that I have, one of the questions I get is, what does it mean? Because my mom used to say this. All right, you're going to do this piano recital. I want you to play for the glory of God. Well, what does that mean? How do you do that? That would be a great question. Love to talk about that sometime. But you know, that's something I really struggle with. What does that look like? And I think this could be some of those answers. You know, if you're communicating something, and part of performing art would be making it yours. If you're just a robot or computer that's just taking dictation and doing it, and it doesn't have that first component, it doesn't have that meaning. You're not actually relating to God and responding out of something. You're just kind of going through the motions. So I think that it could be. Obviously, if we're in relationship with God and we're our heart is in a place where we want to this recital to be glorifying to Him, then I think He can certainly use that. And it's going to be with people afterwards and say, well, you did a great job, or you know, one of you are probably on worship team or other teams is like, thanks for serving. It's like, how do you respond to that? I don't really know. You know, it's you know that awkward moment I'm talking about?
So part of what you're telling us is if we sing or play or create somehow, if we do something that's emotional, use music to be emotional, we're to ask ourselves, how is that glorifying to God? Does that for the moment touch my heart in communicating praise to God? Is that part of where we're going?
Yeah, and again, I think it's going to be a delicate thing, because if we're going for emotional high, then we didn't start in the right place, I think. Right? So we would be really careful with that, even with the music here, that the focus continues to be so we don't go off the slippery slope and it becomes performance and people are completely disengaged. Or we slip off the other side and they're so engaged that they forget God.
Well, isn't that your point, though? We want to be engaged toward
God. Right. Right. So I think of on the top of the hill. So, good. I do need to quit because it's 9 o'clock.